Good morning. How are you doing today, sir?
Earl, great to be on your show.
It's great to have you here because this book is so important to me, and I don't think it's just me. We need to know the history of those that have led this nation, because people, they vote like they're doing things on American Idol and America's Got Talent, and we've got to get back into the history and the roots of who we are as a nation.
Well, I totally agree with that, and what the book aspires to be is a leadership book as well as a presidential history book. The target audience is anybody who is or aspires to be a leader in any organization, running a company, a law firm, a hospital, a nonprofit. And in each of the eight chapters on my eight greatest presidents, Washington, Jefferson, Lincoln, both Roosevelts, Eisenhower, Kennedy, and Reagan, it spells out what each of those had as his most important leadership traits, how he used it to achieve success. And at the end of each chapter has a series of questions for the reader to ask him or herself: how am I doing in building unity, in building consensus, in showing patience when I need, in playing hardball when I need? And so it really is an effort to take the lessons of history and being able to apply them today to daily living as people go about their business of aspiring to be better leaders.
See, if I were a high school teacher or a professor, this would be, they would have to read it, and I would have them take that test at the end of every single chapter.
I'm with you. I'm hopeful that my publisher succeeds in selling this as a textbook, because these really are leadership lessons that are timeless. What worked for George Washington can work for anybody today, and what worked for Ronald Reagan can be used by anybody today. They're timeless, they were effective, and they need to be better understood, and they definitely need to be used more by people in leadership positions.
I was alive during those Ronald Reagan years. I know that when he first came on, he wasn't always a favorite kind of guy, but he had to grow into that leadership role.
Well, the thing about Reagan was, of course, he came into office immediately after Jimmy Carter's disastrous presidency, where we had high unemployment, low economic growth, long gas lines. We couldn't rescue the hostages in Iran. There was a national state of malaise. And Ronald Reagan, throughout his life, was the eternal optimist. And not only was he an optimist, but he had the capacity to inspire optimism, to make Americans rebuild and regain their self-confidence and believe in American exceptionalism, the shining city on the hill. And in time, he rebuilt our national self-confidence. The economy came back. And then, of course, over the 8 years, his foreign policy led to the end of the Cold War. The wall came down. And so Reagan's presidency, it wasn't without its hiccups, obviously, during the second term with the Iran-Contra scandal. But overall, and in each of my chapters, I demonstrate, yes, each of these presidents had flaws, and I spell them out. But let's focus on what they did well, because that's what we need to be learning about if we want to be better leaders.
Yeah, because nowadays, even with advertising, everybody's going for the flaws. And you're right. They always had a great thing. That's like with Roosevelt, with four terms as president of the United States. Everybody goes for the negative, thinking, oh, that was a dictator. He did more. He earned that position to be there a third time.
He won four presidential elections, and in each of them, he had over 80% of the electoral votes. So he was an incredibly popular president, in large part because he was such a highly effective communicator in two areas. Number one, he was a great public speaker. When his first inaugural address, country's bogged down in the Depression, and Roosevelt from the very beginning says, look, folks, the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
Yes.
He projected this self-confidence, made people think, yes, we will come back. Of course, he implemented all those New Deal programs. Some of them worked, some of them didn't, but at least they knew they had a president who was committed to turning the economy around. After the Pearl Harbor attack, he gets on the air. Yesterday, December 7, 1941, a day that will live in infamy, and here's how we're going to win the war. People were inspired. Let's go win the war. And yet he had to bring them back out of being committed to a policy of isolationism, which most of America had until Hitler became bigger and bigger. Progressive, and FDR realized we can't be stuck in isolationism. We've got to take over, or else Hitler's going to take over the world. Yeah. So FDR, an incredibly effective communicator who brought the public around both from his oratory as well as his conversational fireside chats.
Now, to be these great communicators, especially with President Reagan, they had to be incredible listeners as well.
Well, you do have to be a great listener, and in particular, you need to be listening to what the public sentiment is.
Yep.
It's hard to move public sentiments the way you want it to go unless you know what it is. And Reagan had a great sense. He had his finger on the pulse of the American public. He also, throughout his presidency, did radio shows. But before that, when he was working for General Electric, he was going all over the country speaking and listening to the GE workers and knowing what was on their minds. And so that's why he won by a landslide over the incumbent Jimmy Carter. And then for re-election, he won 49 out of 50 states over Walter Mondale. The only state Mondale won was his home state of Minnesota.
Yeah. Did it surprise you that Jimmy Carter became even a greater leader after the presidency?
Jimmy Carter obviously is a brilliant guy, a well-intentioned guy, has a high moral compass. And so as a former president with that as his platform, he's obviously done a lot of great things. But he was not an effective leader.
Right.
As I mentioned, the country went into a national malaise. He was not great at building relationships as the other great presidents were. He was somewhat isolated and didn't have the great relationship with people across the aisle that you got to have if you're going to be an effective president. So I'm glad for his sake that he's had a successful post-presidency. But nobody thinks he had a successful president.
I'm down here in Andrew Jackson country, right here in his backyard. Would he have made your book maybe if you could have extended it to 10 presidents?
No. If we'd had this conversation 30 or 40 years ago, he probably would. Mm-hmm. But over time, as we learn more about Jackson, particularly his treatment of Native Americans, that's so bothersome that the national historian community, he keeps going down in the rankings, as does Woodrow Wilson, who for years people thought was a top 10 president, but because he was an extreme racist that we're all now painfully aware of, his standing keeps going down. Interestingly, a president who's coming up, who for years had been in the bottom half, is Ulysses Grant, because there have been some great recent biographies of Grant, and he's now in the top half, and he before was always in the bottom half. Because of how he tried to stop the lynching during Reconstruction, his attitude toward Native Americans. So presidents are obviously doing what they do in real time. Harry Truman once said it takes 50 years for the dust to settle. And as we learn more and more about the president, it caused today's historians to rethink their original of the effectiveness and overall moral standing of these presidents.
Where along the lines did the president of the United States earn the title of being the most powerful man in the world?
I think that really started with Theodore Roosevelt by injecting America into the Spanish-American War. Of course, it wasn't long after that that when we entered World War One, all of a sudden we turned the tide. And of course, World War Two, we turned the tide. So it started with Theodore Roosevelt and the expansion of American foreign policy and the power demonstrated by our military that caused us to be viewed by the rest of the world in that light.
Wow. Where can people find out more about you in the way of, you know, just gaining access to your skills as a historian and a journalist?
Well, I have a website, talmageboston.com, and I'm a contributing columnist for the Dallas Morning News.
Nice.
And my op-ed pieces can be found on my website. I also have a podcast series that can be found on my website. But first and foremost, these days, my book came out yesterday. I'm trying to spread the message in a time of obviously where we've had two recent presidents who are not exactly viewed in a favorable light, that we do have a rich history. There's a lot that we can learn from history and apply to daily living. And that's the message that I want people to take away from this book and hopefully incorporate into their repertoire as they try to lead in their respective fields.
I love where your heart is. Please come back to this show anytime in the future. The door is always going to be open.
Errol, I'd love to come back. And I'm going to be in Charlotte speaking for the World Affairs Council in the fall. So I hope I'll be able to meet you when I come.
Yeah, let's get together. Let's have a face-to-face and really dig in.
I'd love that.
Excellent. Well, be brilliant today, okay, sir?
That's a deal.